Well, hello everyone. I'm your host, Cindy Ketzel. Thanks for joining us for this episode of 9 to Thrive HR. In this podcast, we team up with experts to bring you the best in HR, talent management, and business strategy. We always love to hear from you. If you do have a specific topic you'd be interested in suggesting, please shoot us an email at podcasts@hci.org. Today, first time with me as the host, maybe this has happened before, but the first time we have a Jungian-trained licensed psychologist on with us. So Dr. Robert Hernandez, Dr. RB, Jungian-trained licensed psychologist who helps HR departments identify, assess, and develop strong, emotionally intelligent leaders. We are so delighted to have you, but tell us, how did you bring these two worlds together that you're working with HR departments?
Sure. Well, the way that I'm trying to do this is always marry these two passions of mine. So I started with learning the approaches of Jung, Carl Jung, analytical psychology, and that's when I began my training. And it really began in Massachusetts when I was doing an internship up there. And there was a lady who worked with corporations. And I was always fascinated about was that she would treat the corporations as if they were an individual. And she would go through their whole history of the company as if she were getting an intake from an individual. And that's kind of what started this whole approach of how do I marry this idea of what we call the ego self axis, which is it's an idea based on Jungian psychology by Carl Jung. And how do I marry that with leadership development? And so this is kind of born, I would say, probably around 2013. And then I did a lot of research to develop it. And I was working at Influence, which is my company now, but it was under the old owner that retired. And I took over the company as president in 2018. So it took me a number of years to kind of put everything together and see the benefits of ego self-axis leadership.
First, this is fascinating. Second, I'm glad that you mentioned Massachusetts because I was like, you have an accent that I hear. So I'm sure that stems from that area. But third, I'm glad you mentioned this because I'm like, what the heck? I mean, I suppose in context, I could put this into language if I really thought about it. Ego self access leadership training. I read that in your bio. So what is that? What is that about?
Yeah. So on the one hand, the ego self-axis is really this relationship that an individual has between their consciousness or what they're aware of, or even who they think they are, what I call their persona. So in this case, if it's a leader, let's say that they're a vice president of a manufacturing company, that will be part of this ego, right? And then the self is that unconscious part of the psyche, where, you know, it could be we even maybe hide the things that we're not so proud of, as well as things that we are great at, but maybe we're scared to let our light shine. That all is part of this bearing thing that we do called the shadow. So in this aspect, it's really about helping leaders reconnect to not who they think they are, but also those other elements, those other parts of themselves that are disconnected. And then that way, we help them to kind of bring up this authentic, what I call charisma aspect to themselves, because a person that demonstrates charisma is really somebody that is connected to who they are. I don't think, and I'm going to say this because I haven't, you know, read anywhere where someone that exudes charisma is also someone that's disconnected. Usually the people that have a lot of charisma, and I'm just thinking of different names right now of famous people, they're also people that have gone through a lot. They've been through many challenges. They've done a lot of self-work, and then they're able to come out on the other side more authentic and more integrated.
That is so cool. I had another recording and that word, authentic, came out of that discussion too, just thinking about our authentic self. And I think that is becoming more embraced. So that's right in alignment with what you're sharing. That's something that you've studied, which is fascinating, right? We were just talking about it as conversation, but you're talking about it more as how we're able to connect with who we are as individuals. That's really cool.
Yeah. I mean, our trainings, really the goal is, how do we take an individual that's being promoted to leadership and they're maybe not ready for it, or maybe their idea of leadership is different than what the organization that they're in needs. And so it's really about, how can you dig deep and know who you really are and then develop that so that you can be who you truly are as a great leader, as opposed to, I'm just going to be a leader, you know, because I think that's what a leader is, or I'm going to do this. And that's where you get into this inauthenticity. And then you deal with a lot of other struggles and challenges.
Well, it becomes, when you're working from a place of inauthenticity, you're kind of just moving through the motions of who you think a leader should be. Like you said, there's not a connection there.
Yeah, there's not a connection, and there has to be passion, and there has to be real motive of why you're in your position of leadership.
I love that. So talking about all of this, one of the things that I was really curious about when I was learning about you, one of the things that struck me is I feel as though I've read and heard over the last few years that we have seen a shift in this work, because I'm calling this an upswing in new leadership traits. Leaders are seen as, or seeing others as, whole people. I'm seeing or hearing the term compassion being more readily used. I'm hearing we've increased, you know, transparency and communication. My goodness, we've had to do that over the last few years. So am I in the right direction? Are you seeing a shift with that as well? I know you mentioned you've kind of been dabbling in this since, well, not, I shouldn't say dabble, but you've been in this, you said 2013, this kind of was born for you. And then 2018, you took over this company. What have you seen over the years?
Exactly. I see exactly what you're talking about. And the other thing that I'm seeing as a result is the conflict that arises out of that. And what I mean by that is, for many decades, leadership has been this traditional kind of set in stone way of doing things. And things have changed. Things have really shifted. And so with that change and with that shift comes new needs for leadership. And so that's where you get into this idea of, we have to be more holistic in our approach to leadership. And I think COVID, the whole COVID experience, and just everything that's been happening in the world in the last couple years has really shifted a lot. And particularly this idea of people just saying, you know what, I want to do something else, and they just quit their jobs. And so that requires a different type of leader, because people are no longer going to stay in a position because they may be afraid to leave, or because they think that there's no other opportunities out there. I think one of the major shifts that happened with COVID, and I see this in my experience, is a lot of people are looking for other benefits, if you will, that's not only related to money or insurance or bonuses. They're really looking for opportunities that they can grow and develop. They're looking for opportunities where they are valued and that people will listen to their ideas, especially if the ideas challenge the organization and the direction of the organization. So it's amazing to me how fast I saw this shift happening. And then you have the whole movement of the silent quitting and all of that. And all of that really just brings to a head that we need new types of leaders. And it's going to be very different than what we've been used to for the last, you know, few decades going back. And you also have new generations stepping up to the position.
Yes.
Yeah. So they don't want to lead the way that other leaders have led in the past. And so that requires a whole new mindset, a whole new shift.
That's exactly what I was going to ask you as you started sharing about some of the experience and the shifts that you're seeing over the last few years or even longer. Do you see you know, kind of this, I want to be in a position that I do have other, afforded other benefits to me, like you said, not necessarily monetarily or a health benefit per se, but opportunities to have more value within the organization or be more connected, maybe even with the overall mission. My question, and you brought it up, is do you see that slices through all generations, or is that something that maybe we're seeing in the newer generations to our workforce?
I think I want to say mostly the newer generation, but it's going to affect across the board, right?
It's going to impact everyone, yes.
Exactly, because when you think of an organization, we always have to consider the culture. So there's the organizational culture, and any shifts in the individuals in the organization is going to affect the culture. So because this shift has been kind of significant in what I'm seeing, the culture has also shifted very quickly and very significantly, if I could use that word again, because of these shifts in these individuals. And I just want to say it's interesting because leaders traditionally, even CEOs, well, mostly the C-suite team, even though you think that they would be in charge and they would run the company as they please, but they have to answer to the board. And so what we're seeing now, at least in my work with leaders, is how do you have that relationship with the board, but still staying in your position of power? Because what I've seen for decades is that leaders have given up their power to the board. And now leaders are ready to kind of challenge the board. And so that's what I'm seeing more and more, which is great. I'm sometimes, you know, they're not happy with us. They're not happy that we come into the organization and just, you know, make these leaders even stronger to challenge their own board. But I think that that's where we have to go.
Wow, I hadn't even thought about it from that perspective. Yeah, that's a deep thought for me. I hadn't made that connection, right? I forget sometimes that there's another guiding emphasis or a guiding power that's sitting outside of, you know, what's within those four walls, if you will.
Yeah.
And so as the leaders shift, the internal culture shifts, but also that relationship between that guiding additional guiding powers, if they exist, is also going to shift, and that shakes things up too.
And another element that's going to shake things up even more, and that's just with the entrance of AI into the mix. And so that's where I get really excited, because AI is now entering the world of business. And so if you have an individual that's not deeply connected to their self, and they just have this ego that's very weak and kind of disconnected, then it's a good chance that AI is going to put a spotlight on that. Because I'm the school of thought that AI is going to force us to be more human. A lot of us have just kind of said, okay, I'm just going to go with the flow and do things that I've always been doing. But we don't realize that that kind of behavior is really robotic. And, you know, if we continue that way, then we'll just be replaced by AI, because AI can do that better. But if we become more in tune with who we are, then we become more human, and AI can never be that.
Wow. We have to be more human. Wow. That's going to freak
some people out. It sounds like I'm blowing some minds here.
Oh, I know. Again, like, it's always new ways of thinking about things that perhaps I hadn't thought. So no, that's fast. Well, at first I thought, what do you mean? And then as soon as you, I'm like, you're right. That's right. Robotic can be replaced. Humanness can't be replaced. Crazy, crazy. So leadership development then, right? That's where we're kind of going. But here's my question for you. There are organizations, and I'm using the word fortunate because I don't think all organizations have been able to do this, or they've not found their way there, or they're working towards this, but there are organizations that are able to prioritize leadership development. What do you think are some of the biggest mistakes they make when they do leadership development training? Where do we fall short with that?
We fall short, or organizations fall short, when they just want to do something the same for everyone. So they want a one-size-fit-all training model. It makes it easier for HR and the HR leaders to think like that, because they'll just create a system and that's it. They create it once and it's done. And they can just then train everyone the same. But that's going back to this robotic aspect, correct, that we've been talking about. And so it's much more difficult to make things tailored. It's much more difficult to look at the individual. So the same way that we want leaders to look at those that they are leading as individuals in a holistic manner, we have to do the same for the individual leaders, right? So one of the things that we do when we enter a company, and this always surprises them, I always like to ask, okay, this individual, what makes you think that they're a good leader? Why do you want them to lead you? And a lot of the time, surprisingly enough, they'll give me a response like, well, they've been here 10, 15 years, and they have this degree and that skill. And I said, really? I said, well, first of all, have you had a conversation with them? Do they want to be a leader? And they say, no, they haven't included them in their decision-making process. So I said, oh, that's interesting. I said, have they been assessed? Oh, yes, they've received different tests. Okay, let me see them. And a lot of the times, the tests that they've given them are just kind of like segmented and fragmented. They're not put together in a holistic way. And some tests repeat themselves in what they offer as far as information. So again, it's this idea of let's create one thing and let's apply it to all the leaders. Like if that's going to really help, and it's not, it actually makes it worse. And then they're surprised, you know, 2 years down the road, why this person is not shaping up to be what they hoped they would be.
You know, it's funny, I teach classes for HCI also. And one of the things I often will talk about in my class is that the course that I'm facilitating is looking at best practices and an ideal state, right? So what you're sharing with me, right, we talked about where are some of our pitfalls, i.e. creating this, you know, cookie cutter approach. So ideal state is to do what you're mentioning, but there's got to be a gap between the two, right? Because when I hear you say that, then I think resources and time, and how do we position that so that those decision makers see the value in slowing down, taking the time? Because like you said, let's throw these assessments out there, have everybody check the box, right? And then we're going to have this one size fits all leadership training. Yep, okay, everybody went through it, but nothing's changing. So what does that conversation look like?
Well, first of all, I think it has to start very early on. And if you're going to be investing, because all of this is actually an investment, right? I mean, you're investing in an individual. And so when you're bringing that individual on board, let's say you are looking for outside leaders to come in. And so that could be one approach. You already know that, okay, I'm hiring at a director level. And, you know, hopefully you're thinking, well, they're going to come in as director and they're going to stay a number of years and move up the ladder. So that's one approach. Another approach is you can look at the leaders that are emerging within the organization. So these could be people that are on the plant floor and you see that they have what it takes to be a leader. You're seeing already some signs of people are following this individual, because a leader is only a leader if people follow you. Otherwise, you're not a leader. And so in our experience, we partner up with HR. I mean, that's really what I always like to say that we do, because it's not really just about, okay, you're bringing us in for a training. We always consider ourselves, okay, we want to get to know you. You're the HR leader. Let's see what your company's about. What are the needs? What are the leadership needs? And then we like to look at their resources, and their resources are all the individuals that are devoting their lives to this organization. Because when you work 8 hours a day, you're devoting your life. That's a big part of your day. And so even the language that we like to use with HR leaders, it's really about, these are human beings that you have there. A happy human being is a human being that's going to give you more. because they just love what they do. They love the organization. They love the mission. And they're going to give you more. So the return on the investment's always going to be better. And if you do not take the time to develop these people, which is a huge resource you have, they will leave. Especially in the last, you know, year and a half, 2 years, we've been hearing about that. Yeah, they'll leave you. And so the irony is, I don't know if you remember, like maybe, I would say probably 15, maybe 20 years ago, it was always this idea of, we have a very small pool of CEOs. And so all these companies were fighting for these people and throwing a lot of money at them and packages. And the sad reality is, if we do not think bigger than that, then the CEO pool is only going to shrink because people are going to retire. So, you know, the person that came back to Disney, and my name escapes me right now, he just came back for a second term as CEO. Why couldn't they find someone else to be CEO? Why did they have to bring someone back that's already contributed to Walt Disney World, you know, to the Disney brand? And so these are some of the conversations that we have with our clients.
So this is curiosity for me, right? So you mentioned ROI. I talk about ROI in many of the classes that I teach. Is that part of the conversation oftentimes when you are building that relationship, when you are starting with identifying the organization and its traits and its resources and all of those pieces? Does ROI often come up? Are they asking about that? Are you able to kind of dictate, here's what comes out of this process?
They don't ask directly, but because we partner with the HR leader, we know that the HR leader, because some companies don't have a CHRO, sometimes the highest HR leader is just a VP of HR. And so because we're partnering with them, we try to help them as much as possible. We want them to succeed in their position. And so we know they're going to have to go back and speak to the executive team about ROI. They're going to have to talk about what does this all cost, you know, and all of that. So we kind of help them with that. And one of the ways that we do that, for example, I mentioned assessments. So in my opinion, before I give an assessment, before I go in there and do another assessment for them, I want to see where they've already invested their money in assessments. I want to see what assessments has already been done. And then I have a conversation of, okay, you have an assessment here that talks about traits. Okay, fine. We have another assessment talks about, you know, let's say skills, specific skills. Okay, that's great. But maybe what they're asking us to do is an overlap. Why do you want that then? Let's pick something else that will be adjacent and that will complete this holistic picture and it'll give you better information. So that's one aspect of ROI, because I don't see them spending the money on something that's not going to really help. And I don't look at leadership like that anyway. I look at it very holistic.
Yeah, that's really smart. I love that. And the phrase that went through my mind was, why recreate the wheel? If something exists for them that was done well, let's add to it. We don't need to now come in as a outside organization and provide the same exact assessments or surveys to you. Yeah, let's just add to what you've already done. I love that.
Yeah, we challenge the HR leaders and they're not used to that. And so it's kind of funny because a lot of the times they think that we're going to come in there, listen to them and say, okay, this is what I have for you. This is what you want and we'll do it. I don't believe in that. And it's not exciting for me. And so I basically just challenge them with questions because I really want to have a better understanding of why they're requesting these services from us.
Absolutely. Yeah. And I think that is valuable as an attribute to your company, right? Like, we're not in this to just, using that same phrase again, this is not a cookie cutter approach. We're going to provide what you need from us.
Yeah. It's just like when you go to the doctor, or you go to a lawyer, any professional, you really want their input. And you just don't tell your doctor, I want you to prescribe this here, sign the prescription. You know, you don't do that. And so that's kind of our approach. I always like to ask, okay, I understand where you're coming from, but why? And the other big thing that I see a lot in many organizations, that they don't even have a leadership matrix. I mean, they don't even know what the competencies are that they're looking for, or maybe they're just getting a competency from the last organization that they worked for, and they're just bringing it into this new organization. And so we challenge that as well. And so, yeah. I mean, our goal is really how to make you succeed as an HR leader. And because if we can do that, your organization succeeds.
Yep. I love that, making that connection. Well, I'm curious, because when I introduced you, Dr. Irby, I mentioned, you know, developing strong, emotionally intelligent leaders. So I want to come back to that. If I'm thinking about emotional intelligence, if I'm thinking about emotionally intelligent leaders, what are some of the benefits of organizations utilizing this type of training?
Well, one of the benefits of this, and this goes along with this ego self-axis leadership, because they have to go within. So as they go within, they realize, okay, this is where I'm, you know, have a strength in this area, whether it's self-awareness or that they're optimistic and resilient, or this is where I have a challenge. And so having an emotional intelligent leader means that you're going to have someone that is connected with who they are. So you're going to have that authenticity, that self-awareness, but you're also going to have someone that's aware of where they fall short and where their challenges are. And they're not going to, you know, cover it up. They're going to be very aware. And so what we teach our leaders is basically, how do you mitigate that so that it doesn't hurt you, hurt your position, and hurt others? So how do you mitigate that? And how do you bring and delegate others who are strong in those other areas? And they can also help you lead better. So I always think of a president in the cabinet. You know, the president doesn't try to do everything. They are provided a cabinet. And a good president surrounds themselves with very highly intelligent people on the cabinet that are hopefully experts in the different areas, so they could give feedback, they could give information, and then, of course, the leader makes the final decision in that area. So having an emotional intelligent leader is somebody that's very attuned to who they are, and that, again, brings about authenticity, and I would say charisma, which is one of the biggest things that we work towards, because when you have charisma, that really means that you are, again, providing this sense of connection, and people, they can see it, they can sense it. You know, you light up a room, you draw people in, and people will follow a charismatic leader.
Mm-hmm. Well, and I love this. I didn't intend on this, but I love this is kind of where we ended, because it really does take us back to the beginning when I was asking you, I was like, what is this ego self-access leadership training? Like, it takes us all the way back. And I wrote down and I circled. I never thought about charisma in that way. But now that you say that, I'm like, wow, I'm going to have to start paying more attention to what it is that attracts me, right, to these individuals in that level of charisma, that connection. There's an authenticity there. I hadn't thought about it that way.
Yeah, an authenticity and warmth. You know, we always like to talk about Cuddy and her work, where she talks about warmth and competence. You know, you need both to be that leader, and charisma kind of puts it together and people will follow you.
Oh gosh. Well, this was so awesome. My first Jungian trained licensed psychologist. Yes.
Woohoo!
Gosh, the listeners are probably so sick of hearing me say this, but I came from a community mental health background. And so I moved from there into the world of HR, and there's a lot of connections. And so I'm passionate about this topic and the connection between the two. So thank you so much for taking time for us, Dr. Irby.
You're welcome. Thank you. Thank you so much. And yeah, I think it's exciting. And I see a bright future ahead for leaders. And I'm very optimistic. So I'm excited to what I'm doing.
And I am here for it. I'm excited about it too. I really, really am. You know, I've got all my nieces and nephews and next generation that are moving into this space. And I'm excited to see what the future holds for them. So as we continue to shift.
Yeah, me too. Likewise. Thank you, Cindy.
Oh, gosh. Well, thank you again. Thank you so much for taking the time. We're going to go ahead and wrap up here. But thank you so much, Dr. RB, for being here with us today. And to our 9 to Thrive listeners, if you don't mind, send us an email to podcast@hci.org if you have suggestions for a guest or for a topic. Also, be sure to subscribe to this podcast in your favorite podcast app. If you are listening on Apple Podcasts, as an example, please give us a rating. Your rating helps other professionals and talent-minded people discover our program. For 9 to Thrive HR and all of us here at HCI, we appreciate you for tuning in. Make it a great day, everyone.